Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. At the White House, President Trump hosting France's leader. Both expressed confidence on working out a deal to end the war in Ukraine.
A lot of good things toward peace are happening, moving it, I think, pretty quickly.
Today marks 3 years since Russia invaded. It comes as European allies are concerned President Trump has shifted his policy on Ukraine to favor Russia. French President Macron says he believes the U.S. is on the same page to finalize a deal of lasting peace.
A lot of good things.
We are very aware of the necessity to have guarantees and solid peace in order to stabilize the situation.
President Trump says he supports Elon Musk's email to federal employees telling them to reply with their top five accomplishments in this past week. Some agency heads, though, are telling workers to hold off on replying. Pope Francis showing some signs of improvement, the Vatican says, as he battles pneumonia. He remains in critical condition. And singer Roberta Flack has died. She was 88. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin has introduced legislation that would allow Americans to import prescription drugs from Canada. According to a press release, the goal of the bill is to lower the prices of those medications and increase access for consumers. They're also hoping the bill will create more competition in the pharmaceutical market, forcing companies to lower the prices of similar prescription drugs in America. The bill has some bipartisan support from Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Attorney General Josh Call has announced Wisconsin has joined another multi-state lawsuit, this time to protect the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. In the lawsuit filed with 22 other states, the coalition argues that the dismantling of the CFPB would cause significant harm to consumers and block enforcement of federal consumer protection laws. The agency oversees big banks, lenders, and credit companies to protect residents from aggressive business practices. The CFPB was formed in the wake of the Great Recession. The criminal case against the New Auburn man accused of pointing a shotgun at his neighbors and law enforcement before ramming an armored vehicle with his truck will be going to trial. According to court documents, 60-year-old Joseph Pushek was arrested in October and charged with four felonies in Barron County Circuit Court. He was also charged with three misdemeanors, including one with a domestic abuse modifier. Pushek entered a not guilty plea in early December, but later amended the plea to not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. With a last-minute gift from the weather, tens of thousands of people gathered in northwest Wisconsin over the weekend for this year's American Birkebeiner Ski Festival. Organizers say last-minute snowfall allowed them to race the entire Cable to Hayward course this year after being forced to create a looped course last year due to inadequate snowfall. In addition to being a local favorite event for decades, the annual race has been a major economic boost for the region. Officials say it brings in about $25 million of economic impact. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Bucks beat the Heat. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks were down by 10 at the half, but came back strong in the fourth quarter, defeating the Miami Heat 120-113. Giannis and Damian Lillard were limited, but that opened the door for players like Kyle Kuzma and Kevin Porter Jr., known as Kuz and Scoot. Doc Rivers.
I think Scoot scored a couple of times, then Kuz gets a rebound, breaks out, creates a basket, then Scoot goes back to it. Just gives us a lot of speed, and we try to make sure we have one roller, and I think it's a good fit.
The Bucks head to Houston to play the Rockets tomorrow night. College hoops. The Badgers now 21-6 after losing to Oregon in overtime Saturday. They host Washington 8 p.m. tomorrow night at the Kohl Center. Marquette is at home tomorrow night against Providence. The Golden Eagles have lost four of their last six games. And the Milwaukee Panthers losing to Robert Morris 72-59. Robert Morris in first place in the Horizon League. The Panthers dropped to fifth. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly sunny and feeling like spring today, with high temperatures rising to the upper 40s. It's pretty breezy out there, with winds out of the west whipping up to 30 miles per hour. By tonight, we become mostly cloudy with flurries possible late. And tomorrow, partly sunny with highs in the upper 30s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 47 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
Oh, Randy Manor is here.
What can you do about this? Focus on what you can impact. Find the courage to speak up to your elected official. If you are silent, then your elected official at the local, state, or federal level will think you completely agree
with
whatever it is you're doing.
Silence equals acceptance.
Correct.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, the U.S. Supreme Court prevents Trump from firing the head of a watchdog agency. Also, are we headed to a market correction? Plus, who are the leaders standing up for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK. Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
Welcome, everybody, to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 p.m. on Monday, and so it is time to be joined by one of our amazing guests for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today, we've got Jill Rosenthal. She is the Director of Public Health for CAPAF. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jill. Thanks so much for making time. Let's get right into it. The Trump administration is posing pretty broad-reaching and deep cuts, as well as targeting certain staff at the National Institutes of Health. First of all, let's baseline set. What is the NIH? Like, what do they do in case people aren't familiar with the NIH? What does it all encompass?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Maggie. I'm happy to start there. So the National Institutes of Health is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, and it is the largest funder of biomedical research in our country. And that is biomedical research is studies of the human body to develop new ways to prevent and treat disease.
So it's important, shall we say. It's incredibly important both for our nation's research capacity, but also how that research capacity ultimately impacts the health of everyone, you and me and our families. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. So cuts to National Institutes of Health or NIH harms public health. It harms science innovation. It harms all of our health and those that we love. And it actually even has implications for economic security. So it's extremely concerning.
Explain that to people who maybe, you know, a lot of my conservative friends tend to support more conservative ideas or policies because it's good for business. So can you help people fill in those dots between research capacity impacting public health and actually being a driver of economic growth, or with Trump's planned cuts and also purges, how we could actually be harming our overall competitiveness and really slowing down or hindering our economic growth?
Yeah, so the NIH-funded research spans more than 300 health topics. So they're researching issues like cancer, diabetes, heart disease, mental health and addiction, aging conditions like dementia, all kinds of different topics. And, you know, that affects all of us. It affects those of us who have illness, those who maybe could get an illness. It affects our family and friends. So it has huge implications in terms of what we know about diseases and the kinds of treatments that we can develop to cure people and any kind of, you know, prevention. It affects medication development, all kinds of things. And there's lots of jobs related to this kind of work. So the estimates are that NIH funding supported 410,000 jobs nationally and fueled about $93 billion in economic spending in the past year. So, you know, it's a huge impact on the economy. And the estimates are that the economic benefit of NIH spending is more than twice the investment that we make through the appropriation. So it has an impact on research institutions, hospitals that do research. It impacts, you know, again, like drug development. It trains our workforce for the future. So there's all kinds of economic impacts.
Just wanted to make sure that we repeated these key facts, folks. I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. She's the Director of Public Health for the Center for American Progress Action Fund, CAPAF, joins me every Monday at 3 p.m. Jill noted that the NIH helps fund over 410,000 jobs nationwide and impacts over $93 billion in economic or commercial activity. And from a return on investment perspective, is thought to provide basically $2 for every buck of taxpayer dollars that go to the NIH in terms of economic activity and growth. And we're talking today about the NIH with Ms. Rosenthal because Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic both funding and personnel cuts to the NIH. All of this in turn will impact your family's well-being. When we look beyond health and, again, these particular economic engine impacts, let's just talk very narrowly about direct impacts here in the state of Wisconsin. Can you tell us a bit about the volume of NIH grants that come into the state of Wisconsin, Jill, and the jobs that it supports here in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So in Wisconsin, in specifically, the state receives almost $600 million in NIH grants, at least did in the last year. And, you know, that's medical research that would be at risk. And that pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in Wisconsin in 1 year. So these are pretty significant numbers. Again, it's jobs, it's economic activity. Some of the research that actually has been happening in Wisconsin are issues around kidney transplants, childhood chronic complex conditions and diseases, prostate and ovarian cancer, the impact of out-of-pocket caps on medication. So, you know, all kinds of research, important issues that are being researched in Wisconsin and, you know, a dramatic impact on the economy. And I think one other thing that's worth pointing out is that the cuts are indiscriminate. They're not related to anything to do with the science or the impact or the usefulness. And they are likely to be cut in areas in particular that the health secretary doesn't agree with. So, for instance, there's a concern about cuts in drug development. So that would be issues like heart medications and also issues related to infectious disease research. So in Wisconsin in particular, there were more than $52 million in infectious disease research grants going into the state just in 1 year.
Wow, truly staggering numbers. A couple of things are jumping out at me here, Jill. Just again, to summarize some of these key statistics, Wisconsin, at least in the last year, received upwards of $600 million in NIH grants. That directly supports nearly 8,000 good-paying, family-supporting jobs in the state of Wisconsin and is responsible for approximately $1.5 billion in economic activity here in Wisconsin. But to make the point really plain, Joe, you look at the University of Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, the Medical College of Wisconsin, Marquette University, like our biggest academic institutions, all are beneficiaries of significant grant money from the NIH. And as the recipient of a degree from both degrees from both Marquette University and the University of Wisconsin at Madison, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out those academic institutions themselves. Not only are they educating our kids, but they are absolute cornerstones to Wisconsin remaining a desirable place for business to happen. They're absolute economic cornerstones to Wisconsin's overall competitiveness. Hurting the University of Wisconsin system, defunding some of their research efforts, hurting Marquette University, hurting the Medical College of Wisconsin will have a negative impact about whether or not people want to move here and stay here, not only get educated and trained here, but stay here. And it hurts our overall competitiveness as a state as well. Or am I overstating that, Joe? I mean, to me, the impact, especially in some of our key research academic institutions here in the state, would be devastating.
Yeah, that is a really excellent point. You know, these are bedrock institutions in our communities, and it hurts hospitals all over the country, research institutions all over the country of all kinds of sizes. So some of them are quite large, some of them are small. And, you know, we know what rural hospitals mean in our rural communities. And so to cut funding that makes it more difficult for those institutions to continue to run is really deeply concerning.
Yeah, I just want to point out that one of the top NIH-funded institutions here in the state of Wisconsin includes the Marshfield Clinic. Again, you start, if you are in a rural area in Wisconsin, if you have a shortage of healthcare outlets, of hospitals with level one emergency centers, hey, take a look at, is your facility receiving NIH dollars? We could be looking at an increasing acute crisis of available care, especially in rural areas in Wisconsin. We're already feeling those pinches. So folks, if you're listening from upstate or the western or northeastern part of the state, go check out, hey, which one of your local medical facilities, especially hospitals with emergency departments, are receiving NIH funding. Donald Trump is looking not to help the crisis of care in rural areas, but in fact, to exacerbate it. I've got with me this half hour Jill Rosenthal. She's the Director of Public Health with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. They join me every Monday at 3 p.m. If you've got a question for Jill or I, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I also want to let each and every one of you know that we've got some resources about the NIH's impacts here in Wisconsin. We're going to put those website links in our show notes for today so you can check out that data and information yourselves. It includes citations for these fundamental facts. $650+ million in a year comes into the state of Wisconsin from the NIH. It supports nearly 8,000 jobs and helps spur $1.5 billion of economic activity in Wisconsin. And again, if you're finding it hard to access healthcare affordably and when you need it in your area of the state, this ain't going to make it better. Only worse. When we come back, we're going to pick up our conversation with Jill. Join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Earl Ingram, host of The Earl Ingram Show. We're celebrating Black History Month by sharing some powerful interviews and stories featuring Wisconsin's own trailblazers. We're also listening to you because conversations can make a difference.
It's got to be had, and we have to have it on a regular basis, not only on the air, but around the coffee table. I was more optimistic than before than I am now. America's taken a big
backward step. I do try to have that conversation about racial disparity and give small history lessons as much as I can.
Join us to continue the conversations as we stand together and learn together. And let's celebrate Black History Month every month. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Earl Ingram Show on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
What celebrity would you like to hug? It's International Hug Day. I wouldn't say Josh Brolin is like my favorite actor, but he's got like a quiet macho-ness to him. Actor Glenn Morshower joins us now.
My self-esteem was jolted when you did not mention me as your hugging preference.
I didn't want to rush it. I just want to see how. Let's just dip our toes in the water here and see what kind of relationship develops, shall we?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
You know, Harvey, the seemingly purposeful no action. What's your sense on the leadership in the Dem Party right now, Harvey?
I'm ashamed of them. What did Trump have on all these people?
Yeah, right.
That we get this kind of silence. Will the Democratic leadership figure out that it's their task to start articulating a Democratic, small d, Democratic vision and project that these people can rally behind? Bam.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 3 o'clock half hour, and it is Monday, and so that means I'm joined by a very knowledgeable guest for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. This afternoon, we're speaking with their Director of Public Health, Jill Rosenthal, who is reminding us about the fact that every single one of us, in some way, is positively impacted by the work of the National Institutes of Health. We're going to get into in a minute, Jill. I want to ask you about what's this indirect cost thing and why does it matter? Because it sounds super technical and people may not realize what it's all about. But I wanted to remind everyone what Jill has been sharing with us is that here are the things that the National Institutes of Health work on: cancer, diabetes, addiction, heart disease, mental health, and the development of new drugs. I challenge any single one of you out there to tell me you are untouched by one of those issues in you or your family's lives. We all benefit from the work of the National Institutes of Health. And if that ain't enough for you, here's their impact in Wisconsin. Nearly $654 million in grants coming into the state of Wisconsin from the NIH every year. That supports nearly 8,000 jobs and helps for $1.5 billion in economic activity here in the state of Wisconsin. They're working on things like Alzheimer's disease. Do you know somebody who has suffered from Alzheimer's? Cancer, chronic lung disease, heart disease, stroke. Again, those are all big killers here in the state of Wisconsin. The NIH works on all of that. So to bring it back to, like, what exactly is Trump trying to do? Where does it stand? There's not only personnel cuts, Jill, but also there was a lot of press about this slashing of indirect costs in research grants to, quote, 15%. Help people understand why, what that is, what are they talking about, and why 15% might sound reasonable, but why in practicum it just don't work that way.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a little wonky, but in addition to the funding that folks receive to do the actual research project, they get an extra amount called indirect costs or funds, which help fund the kinds of things that enable the researchers to do their research. And so that amount is set, it's negotiated by the institution and NIH. It's actually set in law that that's the way this works. And President Trump is proposing to cut it to no more than 15%. There are now institutions that are getting 40, 50, 60%. And that's really important resources for these institutions to do the research that they're doing. So that's paying for things like laboratory equipment. It's paying for scientific libraries to do research. It's paying for maintenance of equipment. It pays for support staff, for utilities. And one particularly concerning piece here is that it also pays to train young scientists. So folks who are working on getting their degrees, who are working at these universities, they are dependent on those resources for their job. So if that funding gets cut to 15%, those institutions are going to have to find ways to reduce that the workforce. And that means we won't be training the scientists of the future. So that not only hurts the particular research topic, but it hurts our
training pipeline, basically, right?
So that we can stay on the forefront of innovation in the future.
Yeah, these two pieces, what I've tried when friends have asked me about it, Jill, I've said, when you're doing the most high-tech, difficult, complex research that is about curing disease and improving overall wellness, you need research infrastructure, the very labs themselves, the software, the programming, all of the updates for that. And it ain't cheap if you want to compete on a global scale and help innovate. It is always the most state of the art. Important here that the negotiation between the NIH and, in most cases, the research institution that is conducting this sort of groundbreaking, life-saving research is written into law to be negotiated, which means there is variability depending on the type of research we're talking about. And so that has been the approach. This to me is an example of the epitome of just across the board cutting with no rhyme or reason, having disastrous impacts. The reason that, Jill, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you mentioned the use of indirect cost percentages to train people is that they're not the PhD holder in given science, so they're not the grant recipient, and yet those people who are the direct grant recipients need to train people. So the actual human beings are oftentimes, the trainees are oftentimes part of that indirect cost. I'll just say this. For those of you that don't know my background, I was both a research and teaching assistant in my master's degree level coursework. I was effectively one of those trainees. My studies were actually covered in part by not an NIH grant, but a grant from the National Science Foundation. I was working on a research project with my professor in economics. So it shows up in lots of places. We are all being impacted positively now by the good work of the NIH, but this in peril and jeopardy. Jill, where do things stand right now with these absolute gouging cuts with no rhyme or reason to them that Donald Trump has proposed?
Yeah, so that's a good point. Because it is in law, it is being legally, the cuts are being legally challenged. And we are right now waiting for that to play out in the courts. So right now there is a stay. So the cuts have been blocked and that's temporary. So we are waiting. There was, in fact, a hearing just on Friday that extended the cut for a bit. And we're waiting for a final decision.
So the litigation is proceeding right now. Those cuts put on hold. Call up your elected officials in Congress. Call Senator Ron Johnson. Tell them, don't cut the NIH. Their business is saving your lives and our lives as Wisconsinites and Americans. Big thanks to you, Jill Rosenthal, Director of Public Health for the Center for American Progress Action Fund, making us all smarter this afternoon. When we come back, everybody, I'll be joined for Dom Salvi, the guy with the great show that follows mine, for a little bit of In Case You Missed It as we review the week's past headlines. Keep it locked, everybody. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin snowmobile owners, trail operators, and local businesses are thrilled with the snow and the promising season ahead. Sam Landis, director of the Association of Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs, shared insights on how, despite the number of sleds out on the trails increasing, the number of fatalities has decreased.
You'd be surprised because, you know, today compared to 1991, I think I went to a meeting where we had 149,000 registered snowmobiles, okay? Today, there's roughly between 220 and 240,000 registered sleds. Now, if you take a look at the data from 2002 up, our fatalities have been cut in half because the machines are nicer, they're more comfortable, yes, they're faster, but the thing is, people have more of an investment in them.
That's Sam Landis, director of the Association of Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
When it's time to choose a residual herbicide for your soybeans, you need broad-spectrum weed control that lasts. Zidua Pro and Zidua SC herbicides by BASF give your crop up to 2 more weeks of residual weed control, providing 50% more control than other Group 15 residuals. The long-lasting herbicide portfolio protects your soybeans from even the toughest weeds while providing a steady growing environment for the entire season. Talk to your retailer today about adding Zidua Pro and Zidua SC herbicides to your 2025 plan. Always read and follow label directions.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
The end of harvest, snow-covered fields, and an early morning sunrise. Winter is a good time to evaluate your livestock's health. BioVet loves seeing healthy animals contribute to your farm's profitability. The knowledge and support from our team is here to help you make the difference in the health and productivity on your farm. Help your livestock stay healthy and call 1-800-BioVet1 or visit bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 491 and a quarter, down 6 3/4. New crop corn closed at 475, down 4.5 cents. Cash beans closed at 1039 and a half, that was down 6 cents. And new crop beans closed at 1059 3/4, down 1.5 cents. Cash wheat closed at 590, that was up 4.5 cents, and new crop wheat closed at 617 1/4, up 3 1/4 cents. On the dairy side of things, March Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1904 a hundredweight, that is down 16 cents, and April milk is trading at 1870, down 22 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 180, that was up 1.5 cents. 40-pound block cheese had no change today and closed at 190. And the AA butter closed down 3/4 and closed today at 241.5. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Partly sunny and feeling like spring today with high temperatures rising to the upper 40s. It's pretty breezy out there, with winds out of the west whipping up to 30 miles per hour. By tonight, we become mostly cloudy with flurries possible late. And tomorrow, partly sunny with highs in the upper 30s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 48.
Did you know? VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served.
In the military, we make a lot of sacrifices, and with the VA loan, it makes it easier for us to get a home.
We were able to purchase this home and then use the money that we were going to use as a down to actually fix up the home. I would tell anybody who is interested in getting a VA loan to just do it.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson joins us.
There's a hockey game tomorrow night between Canada and the U.S. Everywhere up in Canada when they were playing the game, the U.S. was being booed. Imagine how you would feel if your neighbor were constantly saying, "I'm taking your backyard." You would find that very serious. That's what's happening around the world. We are going to have no friends, period.
That matters.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, maternal mortality rates are on the rise across the country. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here to explain it all. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome, everybody. You can bang your head along with me and my next guest, my good friend and yours, the man with the fine program that follows this program every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. His name is Dom Salvia. Welcome to the Maggie Don Show. Dom, thanks for making time. It's a little chance for us to talk about what we missed this past week.
We don't miss anything, Maggie Don. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to catch up.
Good to see you, my friend. Let's start with another day, another Nazi salute. It really seems like this may be a recurring theme here for the MAGA movement. Yes, folks, that's right. It's not just Elon Musk popping off a little Sieg Heil at an inauguration event. No, don't worry. Even Elon Musk's apparently sworn enemy, who's called him a parasite. Yes, that's right. Donald Trump's other key advisor, Steve Bannon, also popping out a Nazi salute this past week at the CPAC. This is this Conservative Political Action Committee conference that was going on. Yes, folks, Steve Bannon with a little Nazi salute. You can't hear the salute, but I'll give you the sound where he does it. Kelvin, let's let her rip.
The only way that they win is we retreat, and we're not going to retreat. We're not going to surrender. We're not going to quit. Fight, fight, fight.
And then the Nazi salute. Amen.
Wow.
And then an amen. Yes.
Can I get an amen?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is wrong with people, Dom? Like, why is that okay? Why would anyone who supports the MAGA movement be like, mm-hmm, yeah, you guys should keep popping off a little Sieg Heil? That really adds credibility to our political party.
I mean, the neo-Nazis are even thinking, man, this is getting to be a little much, guys. You know, can you keep
it down? We're supposed to keep the quiet part quiet.
Keep it down to a low roar. You know, the fact that there isn't a massive outcry from the Republican Party kind of tells you everything, right? When the megas are silent in the face of these very obvious, it speaks for itself kind of right. Motions and salutes and so forth. And when there's silence, a deafening silence from that side, and then you see the Nazis are like super excited about it. What does that say? Well, I mean, they have embraced the Nazi mentality. I don't know what else to tell you. If you're on stage doing a Nazi salute at a conservative conference,
guess what?
You're a Nazi.
You're a Nazi.
You're a Nazi.
Well, we've got a guy that is one of our favorite callers who's probably going to say he's not a Nazi, but I want to ask him about it. CJ, welcome back to the Maggie Don Show, sir. What's the deal? Can we at least agree that Steve Bannon and Elon Musk should not be doing Sieg Heil at MAGA events, that's probably a bad look?
Well, once again, thanks for taking my call, Maggie and Dom, but you know, you misrepresent what he did. If you heard what he said, I give you my heart. And he grabbed his heart and he threw it up in the air. But that's okay. Did you see today that
CJ, hang on. I'm setting the topics this afternoon, and I just want to follow up on this. You can say whatever you want about the context, but that is a very specific image, a salute that has a very specific meaning that most people the world over associate with Nazism. I don't care what explainer you put around it. If we are people of good faith and we want to condemn the Nazis and condemn Holocausts, why is that a good idea? There are lots of he could just put his two hands, clasp them over his heart. If his intention is a good faith one to express not racist, Holocaust related Nazi imagery, but to express his heartfelt engagement and solidarity with his crowd, there's a million other things that he could do. Why is that gesture acceptable?
Oh, you guys sound so desperate. He is running circles around the Democrat Party.
CJ, can you answer my question, please? Whether you think it is effective rhetoric, whether or not you agree with whatever I say about other things, can you and I say that is not an appropriate gesture? And that the fact that it keeps being made by people who are leading the MAGA movement is problematic?
You're desperate, Maggie.
CJ, with all due respect, you should be able to say, we should all be able to say, Nazis bad. Nazi salutes bad.
How hard is it to say that Nazis are bad? CJ can't even say it. He won't even address it. Not only is he given cover for Elon Musk doing it twice, he didn't address Steve Bannon doing it the other day at CPAC. It's not about being desperate. It's about calling out what you see in front of your eyes and addressing it. It is a symbol of hate. It is a symbol of murder. It is a symbol of Holocaust. And if you are not offended by that, then I can't come up with another thought as to what your position may be other than you support it, CJ.
Yeah, every time this is what happens with CJ. I do not understand why you simply cannot acknowledge that symbol, that salute should have nothing. If you want people to take your political party legitimately and not call people things like racists and anti-Semites, you had better just say Nazis bad, Sieg Heil bad. Just say it. Be like, gosh, I really hope he meant something else, but he should knock that off. And then we can talk about whatever distractionary slam you want to give for the day, CJ. We got some callers that want to get in here. Eric from Milwaukee, you're up next. Thanks for calling, sir. What do you have to say? Oh, lost Eric from Milwaukee. Eric, call back, sir. You look like a new caller. I always want to get those new folks on the air. Gene from Eau Claire, you're up next. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. You know, he always tries to just change the subject when you ask a question and then go after you guys. It's like getting smoke blowing out of my ears. It's so ridiculous. Come on. I'm not going to say his name or be nasty or anything, but we're not stupid, sir. We don't play that kind of game around here, and it just gets us old folks really upset. And you know,
Your steam coming out of your ears, Gene, and mine and Dom's as well. How silly, silly, silly. We've got Margaret. You're new to the show. Margaret, welcome. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Jim Charles and what he's done and the money he's contributed to the party. And he's unelected. And what about all that Elon Musk did for the North Carolina people when they had no way of communicating?
So, Margaret, let's just talk about Starlink for a second. Elon Musk allowing Starlink to assist aid victims, I'm all for it. Like, I'll give him credit where it's due. What do you think about Donald Trump defunding FEMA, defunding the portion of U.S. Housing and Urban Development Department that provides community block grants to communities devastated by those sorts of disasters? Is that also good? Wouldn't, if we're being logically consistent here, wouldn't we oppose those sorts of cuts that are going to hurt those very people Elon claimed to be wanting to help?
Okay, what about all the money that FEMA sent?
I'm just asking you, we can address other concerns you may have about FEMA, some of which have been disproven as simply made-up propaganda. But if we're concerned about the victims of disasters, doesn't that mean we should be increasing disaster funding, not cutting it? So does the inconsistency of Donald Trump and Elon Musk on that point cause you any pause, Margaret?
He sent money to them, not through FEMA. Trump did.
Ma'am, with all due respect, Donald Trump wasn't president when that emergency happened. So Trump wasn't sending any of his own money. And secondly, Donald Trump right now is proposing to cut the very programs that those people need. Do you support those cuts?
I support Trump, and I believe that he has good reasons for the reasons for the different things that he is doing.
And if I may, Margaret, what would be one of those reasons? What do you believe that Donald Trump, what is his reason? You believe that he has good reason for what he's doing? Can you give me an example of that?
Well, he cares about the people, and he's actually making money available for them.
But I guess I'm confused, Margaret. What we know is he's proposing widespread cuts to FEMA, as well as the single largest program that helps fill in the gaps to rebuild infrastructure. This is money that comes through HUD. He's proposing to basically shut that down. It's exactly the things that people in North Carolina need. I just want to be clear. You support those cuts, even though you're also saying that you support disaster relief going where it should?
He's making cuts, but he's also providing what these people need through other means. Biden never did any of that.
I'm just going to hop in here. Margaret, thank you very much for your patience and your back and forth. I think we got to keep trying here. But what Margaret's saying is simply not true. Many of the criticisms of the Biden administration, there was one FEMA official that had instructed staff to skip houses with Trump signs. That official was fired for doing that. Joe Biden put hundreds of millions of dollars towards disaster relief. The fact of the matter is, Miss Margaret, Donald Trump is proposing to cut the very programs that help disaster victims like those in North Carolina. The math just doesn't math. We got to get beyond what we believe or hope to be true and deal with the actual facts. I got Dom Salvia with me this afternoon right here on today's edition of In Case You Missed It with Dom. He's got the fine program following mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Dom, it's kind of like being this... Everything he does is good. It's all fine.
I believe that he wants to help people. Well, you can believe what you want, but again, look, what is his action? What is his record on that? And beyond that, you know, here the coaching in the background. I don't know what's going on there.
I think it's Margaret's husband, maybe.
It's all right, but whatever you got an advisor, you know, to help out. But you don't specifically address the questions and the whataboutisms and the false comparisons to what Biden did versus what Trump did. I mean, you're off on your timing. You're off on the facts. You're just misguided, Margaret. And I appreciate you trying to chime in and jump in on this, but I think you need to do a little more research. You know, the internet out there. I know people like to do their own research. Tell me exactly how and where Donald Trump, prior to his election to presidency, did anything for anybody during the Biden administration. I'd like to know
Didn't. Like to keep his money in his own pocket. Eric from Milwaukee, sir, you're up next. Go ahead.
Yes, just addressing what CJ said about the gesture by Musk, giving Musk any benefit of the doubt, if he would have done that, any person that did that accidentally, which I don't think it was, would have come back the next day and said, that was a foolish mistake. I did not mean to do that. But he refused to do that when he was asked to do that and followed it up with more jokes, with Nazis in the word.
Yes.
So it's totally disingenuous to say that was a mistake. It was intentional. His grandparents were members of the Nazi party. And, an apple doesn't fall far from the tree, in my opinion.
Yeah, we gotta call BS BS, and that was BS. And here's to everybody, including you, CJ, that's like, oh yeah, it was just a gesture of generic solidarity and how heartfelt he was. If so, here's what I suggest, CJ, and every excuse maker for Nazis that I've come across as of late. Please go find your nearest synagogue, stand outside after Friday services, and pop a couple of those off to the nice Jewish people leaving the synagogue. Let's see what they have to say about it. If it's so okay, and just an expression of solidarity, why not greet a couple of coworkers next Monday morning, or I don't know, tomorrow morning when you show up at work with a couple of Sieg Heils. If it's so inoffensive, take a video of yourself Sieg Heiling your way through the afternoon and post it on the interwebs. See how that sorts out. Folks, we pick up this episode of In Case You Missed It with Don Salvia. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. When we come back, we're going to talk about this weird email that Musk sent. Tell me what you do or else, and then apparently retracted it today. Ugh, more chaos when we come back after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up, with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Fade.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Slam dunk, Steven Crow hammers it down.
Catch every game all season long right here on the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Earl Ingram.
The one and only Professor Bob Harvey has graced the airlines with us. Let's go to Vincent.
With this new administration, African-American history is under assault. To Professor Harvey, how important are we, is it to, for us to fight back, not only for Black History Month, but throughout the year?
African-American history is not going anywhere. Start digging into history. You find out that long before the Mayflower, Blacks were already here.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on Air.
To rumble in the streets, but at least we can admit Nazis, or should be able to say together, Nazis
bad. Yes, we can do that.
Sieg Heil, bad. Shouldn't do that. Oh, but sometimes, you know, even those simple points are a little hard to grasp. We got a couple callers on the line. You folks stay right there. I want to get into this. Then we're going to go back to the phones. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. My name is Maggie Dawn. I've got Dom Salvia, who's got the fine program that's coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Let's talk about this weird freaking veiled threat email. Apparently, Elon Musk sent an email to, I don't know, it looks like everybody in the federal government on Saturday that said, tell me what you did this past week and got anything done or you're fired. And I'm not exaggerating here, that it ricocheted across federal government. Socials lit up about it. And what I think is interesting, some Trump-appointed agency heads, so these are Trump's handpicked people, then sent out their own email to their actual people and said, please ignore that claptrap. That's not a thing. This included the FBI, the Department of Defense, Department of State, Department of Energy, Department of Health and Human Services, and Homeland Security. They all told their employees not to respond. It even reached some sitting federal judges who are lifetime appointees under Article 3. So, yeah, I don't know, Margaret. I don't trust the guy that sends out the blast emails to people whom he has no authority over telling people to tell me what you did last week or else.
I saw that horror movie. It's called I Know What You Did Last Summer. I mean, let's think about this for just a minute. The guy doesn't have any authority technically over these folks, as far as I'm concerned, right? And what is more inefficient? What is more inefficient than having millions of employees read this email and being told, start being told different things from different supervisors? Did you get the memo? Did you get the TPS report? Did you get the memo? It's like the office. It is absolutely
ridiculous.
It is not efficient in whatsoever. When people are bouncing around and the whole everything blows up, well, what's getting done then?
Yeah. Cal, we got a bunch of people on the phones. If you could let them know if we got them screened. I'm going to go to Cam from Appleton briefly. Cam, we got a lot of folks trying to get in on this.
No problem. I just am wanting to make it a little bit clear for people that have any doubts that Elon is waving weirdly or doing a Sig Heil. I think news stations and sites didn't report on this because it's a little complicated for people that don't typically use it. But the short version is that on 4chan, he was pretending to be his alt profile, Adrian Dittman, a month or so ago. And 4chan's population is largely alt-right.
Yes.
You can use his post ID to search all of the previous things that he's posted on there for years. And all the stuff that shows up, the dude's a Nazi.
Yes. I mean, your alter ego on 4chan, the Nazi alt-right, cesspool, is spewing Nazi sayings and thinkings, and you make jokes about Nazis and the Holocaust. Like, you might be a Nazi, Elon. I'm looking at you. Ron from Milwaukee, you're up next.
Hi. A distinction that a lot of people don't talk about or say anything about is that Trump and his cronies and Elon are going after federal civil servants. And I don't know how many people know what a civil servant is. They're not appointed by the president. They're not appointed by anybody. They're hired on merit. They have to go through tests and everything else and compete with other people for the job. And they're supposed to be non-political. So the first question out of the mouth of the White House is, who did you vote for? And that leads to the second question is, your vote is supposed to be secret and sacred. You don't have to tell anybody, even your employer, who you voted for.
Amen, Ron. That's what they're trying to do. Litmus test. Who'd you vote for? Who do you donate to? And if it's not our guy, you're gone. That's not how federal civil service works. It's not how civil service works anywhere. These are apolitical people who just want to come and do their job. They have a given area of expertise. That's what it's about. That's who they're going after. Because, you know, apolitical experts will on occasion tell you the truth, repeat some facts. Maybe that's not convenient for you. Darby from Madison, you're up next.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My greatest worry is watching them literally gut the government so that when it's time for a new government, everyone will be on board about Trump staying. Everyone. He'll have no one to push back. And this is the lesson that he learned the first time, that if you want control, you have to get rid of everybody with a conscience.
Darby, 100%. Dom, your reactions. We're going to try to squeeze at least one more in here, too.
It's the playbook. It's an old playbook, and it's coming back around again. Great points.
Alec from Milwaukee, you're up next on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend? Alec. Oh, we lost him. Sometimes that happens. Last but surely not least, Mark from Prairie Sack. Make it brief, friend.
Yeah, there's a way to make it to a heartfelt gesture, and Musk hasn't done it, and Bannon didn't do it either. I mean, have your hand open and face. The hand is facing the people, and it's below your shoulder, so that's if you're reaching out.
Yeah, a couple tips.
We all know what it's like. I mean, if there's any way to just flash it like that, they do it for a Nazi salute so they can bait us and they can wink at one another. Yeah, we're all little Nazis, and we're going to do it like this, and that FAQ us doing a Sig Heil. Well, we didn't mean it to be a Sig Heil. It was just a open-hearted gesture of friendship.
Right.
Garbage. Yeah, you did. Uh-huh. It's a Sig Heil, that quacking thing with the feathers and the webbed feet. Yeah, it's a freaking duck, gosh darn it. Thanks so much to my friend Dom Salia, who joins me every Monday at 3:30. Keep it locked. I'll stand up for you. Remember, always, it's better when we stand together. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome RogerEbert.com film critic Mariah Gates for some Oscar talk, and entrepreneur Chad Franker joins the show to talk about a new program to combat loneliness.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. After holding talks at the White House, President Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron say there is a path to peace in Ukraine. Ukraine so far not involved in discussions, is marking 3 years since Russia invaded and dealing with a shift in policy by the U.S. ABC's Patrick Reval is in Kyiv.
The Ukrainians will have been relieved to hear that there was very little criticism of Ukraine from President Trump. He seems to really dial back his criticisms that he's been making. He said that he's been having good conversations with all sides now, which is a marked change from what he's been saying in the past few days.
Elon Musk's Doge team now telling federal employees to respond to an email by midnight listing what they did last week. But some department heads, including the FBI, telling workers not to respond due to the sensitive nature of their work. Pope Francis remains in a Rome hospital battling pneumonia. The Vatican says the 88-year-old shows signs of improving but is still in critical condition. This is ABC News.
I'm James